A podcast of the cinema.
Good afternoon, Alonzo Duralde, my husband and co-host.
Hello, Dave White, co-host slash spouse.
You are a man about town. You are...
And oh so debonair.
You are the reviews editor of the rap.
Yes.
You are... Let me see if I can get all your jobs right.
Okay.
You are a dude what works... For Outfest?
Yes.
You are, which is the queer film festival of note.
Of Los Angeles.
Of Los Angeles. You are 1/4 of the What the Flick team on the Young Turks Network.
Correct.
You are 1/3 of the Who Shot Yas from Who Shot Ya, which is a podcast on the Maximum Fun Network.
That is correct.
I am the Mac in the back.
You are a film critic.
I also am a film critic. I write some reviews sometimes for the rap. Sometimes I'm on the radio with you for KCRW's Press Play.
You are an occasional... pop rocketeer.
You know what? Let's not even call me that. Let's call me as what I called myself,
which is
this past week, everybody's 4th favorite substitute teacher.
Oh, stop.
I'm okay with that. I invented that expression about me. I feel that it is accurate. I'm just happy that I get called to be the 4th favorite substitute teacher from time to time.
Well, we...
'Cause ahead of me, they got Lewis. They got April. Lewis Vertel, who has his own podcast on Max Fun now.
No.
Oh, no, it's not on Max
Crooked
Fun.
Media.
It's on Crooked Media.
Yes.
Sorry. Getting the podcast networks confused in my mind. You don't have to tiptoe. You can just... A friend
the
is
pristine audio quality
a
here.
A friend is exiting the house and trying to do so quietly, not understanding
on
that
little cat feet.
No one cares about sound quality of this podcast.
Well, here's the thing. April Wolf has two
is
podcasts
another
now
one
because
the pop
she, she's got
and then who, you are a pop rocket
yeah,
fill-in.
But look,
so I'm just saying, you don't even have to go into all these details.
But here's the thing. April has Who Shot You and Switchblade Sisters.
Yes.
I've got Who Shot You. Lewis has Keep It. So you suddenly are like the guy with the least on his plate so they can call you and know that you're
there's
available.
Plenty on my plate.
Well, you know that no one argues that.
Fixing you dinner tonight.
But no, people
we're going to have to keep this, in spite of all this hoo-ha back and forth that we got going on right now, we're going to have to keep this nice and tight
fine.
This week.
People have found the show because of you on Pop Rocket and me on Pop Rocket. And...
things to dunk in breadcrumbs.
Okay, fine.
And that's going to take a while.
So
I've already rolled up the ham
we
and the cheese inside the chicken, and they're each one... When you sit down and eat it, you better watch out because there's like 4 toothpicks holding it together. This does not hold together on its own.
Would you like to hear a food podcast hosted by 2 film critics?
Let's get to that later.
Patreon.com/linoleumknife.
No. At the end of the show, we do that.
You don't tell me.
I just told you.
I'll plug when I want to plug.
Yeah, okay.
Patreon.com/linoleumknife. So we're gonna hold off on Best Foreign Film nominee Loveless, which opened in theaters this weekend.
And which we did talk about.
Which Dave talked about during
December.
Its award run.
Yeah, it had a 1-week run in December in Los Angeles.
I haven't seen it yet, though.
So,
we're gonna circle
go
back
deep
to that
on
one
it next week.
And we're going to come back around to Francois Ozon's Double Lover because Dave really needs to see it because it's cuckoo bananas.
I like Jeremy Renier. I like Jeremy Renier probably. More than I like the filmmaker Francois Ozon.
Oh, well, okay.
Who I think is fine. I'm happy with Francois Ozon. I've seen a lot of his films, mm-hmm. mostly. You know, I'm really into his early work. Yeah.
Anyway, if you want to hear my...
That band was fine for two albums.
If you want to see my review of Double Lover, I reviewed it at The Wrap, and I also reviewed it on What the Flick this week. Yeah. But the whole time I was watching it, I was like, Dave's got to see this. So when you see it, we will talk about
it. I'll just sit there and say, I've got to see this.
I think it's up your alley.
Where's it playing? Because I know your link is broken by now.
Probably so. I don't know. We'll look it up. We'll figure it out. Perhaps it's showing at a Lemley Theater, like the one we went to today to see Surfer.
Let's talk about Surfer.
Teen Faces Fear.
After.
Teen Confronts Fear?
Teen Confronts Fear.
Teen Confronts Fear.
Yeah. I don't want to kick off with Surfer. And the reason I don't want to kick off with Surfer is because...
Once we start talking about it, we'll never
stop. We are the only persons... in earshot of this podcast, who have seen Surfer. This movie is being self-released in a practice that is called four-walling.
Yes.
In which you rent a theater for a week and you show it at that theater. You do not have a distributor like a normal movie that you would find in multiple theaters. So in Los Angeles, we have an independent art house theater chain, Lemley. And Music Hall is seemingly their now go-to location for four-walling teeny tiny little movies that can't get a distributor and that are often
If you want to have your film be screened, and maybe because you're trying to show that it'll have a life on video, or you just have some sort of contractual obligation, or say it's a movie that you made with a ton of footage, surfing footage that you shot of your own son, and you want to put it in theaters, you four-wall a house, you pay the theater to show it for a week, and then you collect the box office, such as it is.
All right, we're going to talk about Surfer right now.
Even when only three people showed up at the noon show on Sunday, and two of them are on this podcast.
We saw this movie, it's called Surfer, a couple months ago. Our friend Phil Blankenship posted the trailer on Twitter, and... the weird thing about the trailer and about the poster and about any internet stuff connected to it is that it says the word Surfer and then the little copyright logo next to it.
Yes.
Always. Like you're copywriting the word Surfer.
Because you can't copyright a title, but no one told these folks.
And underneath it, acting as either like the second half of the title or the tagline or both, depending on where you are and how you're
reading it.
Encountering this film. It says, Teen Confronts Fear. So we have just taken to calling this movie Surfer Teen Who Confronts Fear, or Surfer Teen Confronts Fear, like a newspaper headline. The guy who made this movie... a physics professor at USC. Mm-hmm. And now I have to know if Karen Tongson knows him.
Yeah, I already messaged her.
Did she respond?
Not yet.
All right.
I said, this colleague of yours has made a movie. I need to know everything.
Karen Tongson, the fantastic co-host of Pop Rocket.
Yes.
As we were mentioning earlier, I am a guest on Pop Rocket this past week.
Yes.
We're talking about love and Valentine's. But it's, you know, love is a year-round topic, so it doesn't really matter that Valentine's Day is over. Go listen to Pop Rocket featuring me, the fourth favorite substitute school teacher.
Learn some things.
The movie is directed by, last name is Burke?
Yes. Michael?
Chad?
Michael, I think.
Something
I think it's
like
Michael
that.
Burke.
Okay.
Joseph.
Something Burke.
Right. The son's name is Sage.
Sage, and the son plays a boy named Sage.
Yes.
And the father, the director, plays the boy's father. He plays the boy's father. He also plays the boy's father's ghost. A ghost that is made from squid and electricity.
We know this because that's a line in the movie.
We know this because that's a line of dialogue in the movie, but also because he pukes up a black liquid and says, "That's ink."
So the film starts with young Sage fishing off a pier, and as he literally cuts bait, in voiceover, he tells us very stiffly...
Voiceover that is akin to Sally Brown in Charlie Brown Christmas saying, "All I want is what I have coming to me. All I want is my fair share." That 5-year-old in that classic television special is a better deliverer of dialogue and voiceover narration than this poor kid who is only trying to please dad.
Yes. At some point...
On screen and off, clearly.
At one point during the movie, also citing Pigpen from the Charlie Brown Christmas special, I turned to Dave and I said, "Makes you want to treat the 1517 to Paris with more respect."
Doesn't it?
Doesn't it?
It does.
So anyway, so he clumsily narrates the fact that he was a surfer, but then he was he got hit by a wave and almost drowned, and now he's scared. So he fishes to be close to the ocean and to feed fish to the sea lions, but he is just too afraid to surf.
But then comes the ghost of the father, who's made of squid and electricity,
to tell him about the spirit of how the fear needs the energy of the nerves that vibrate and.
Yes.
Something.
And when you see a dead whale on the beach, that is a manifestation of fear. And
because of Jonah.
Because of energy in Jonah, and you have to shoot the energy up through your hands and feet.
Because originally you were a one-celled organism at the bottom of a black ocean before when the earth was still a void.
But then the God, who is God, puts the spirit of God into you to conquer your fear that you must relive again and again, over and over, until you conquer it with the God that is inside of you.
Now, under all this...
Hang on, that's not the end of the explanation.
Sorry.
This is very complex.
I just wanted to describe...
Only spiritual people can understand.
While all this is being said, we see lots of footage of very young Sage being taught how to surf.
Yes.
And it turns out...
I want to tell you also...
Footage of Sage surfing is the whole raison d'etre of this film.
Getting to that in just a moment. This initial sequence, I clocked it, goes on for 40 to 45 minutes. They are standing against a rock wall.
Talking.
Badly. These are people who've known each other intimately as father and son off camera their entire lives, and they cannot carry on a conversation like two natural people as if their lives depended on it. Furthermore, the father erupts into histrionic howling and grunting.
After the first lengthy monologue, the son asks him some question or other, and the father launches into, "Oh, they didn't tell me I would feel."
They, meaning the squid, the electrical squid gods that sent him back to Earth to see his kid.
And okay. I'm underplaying
you
that
are.
Moment.
You are. You're demurring.
I'm
for the
dialing
sake
it
of the microphone.
Way down.
Yeah. Okay. Talk about the surfing footage and why it is actually what's happening here.
So, yeah. So, clearly, Dad has been shooting Sage surfing their entire lives.
Yeah.
For Sage's entire life.
Yes.
And as we come to find out, there's a lot of this footage that he's had sitting around, so he's going to make a movie out of it.
Right.
So, after the lengthy footage of the kid surfing as he tells all this stuff about the spirit and the vibrations and the whatever... Then he gives the kid a name and some gibberish codes, numbers, and letters, and tells him to go to find the guy because he's got to go to Bali and surf to overcome his fear, and then he tells him about two storms. Then, okay, cut to Sage in our neighborhood.
Our neighborhood.
Going to the Lee Strasberg Playhouse.
Which is doubling as a hospital.
A military hospital.
Across the street from the 7-Eleven and the Los Tacos.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, so they're trying to, you know, the woman in the lobby is like, you can't be in here. This is a military installation. And the doctor's office is clearly like, I'm sure, the stage in there. There's like a brick wall behind them with like a knotty pine particle board.
Yeah.
Board in the wall and then like crappy mismatched garage sale furniture, and he shows the
makeshift clinic in Apichatpong, where Seth Akund's Cemetery of Splendor,
that's in an old elementary school,
abandoned elementary school on a graveyard, is a more sophisticated setup.
Yes.
Than this.
Far more.
Yeah.
So anyway, they show the doctor the gibberish numbers and letters, and he realizes that this kid is the son of this guy who's actually still alive, but is trapped in a loop where he keeps reliving some terrible thing over and over again, and they wheel out the director again, but this time he's like making a face and screwing his hands up.
Yeah, yeah.
And
he's
having
in a catatonic state.
Weird fake seizures.
So that's actual dad. Now inhabiting two realms of existence.
Yes.
Kind of like Twin Peaks, The Return.
Eerily like it.
Yes.
Yeah. Mind you, Burke the Elder is the writer, director, producer, executive producer, and composer
and
of
sometimes
the film.
Cinematographer.
Also that. Yeah. Yes. So then the doctor talks to a sea captain in front of a green screen of a battleship.
Bribes him with a bottle of Hennessy.
Bribes him with a tiny, like a little hip flask-sized bottle of Hennessy.
Yes.
And then the kid...
It's expensive.
And then the kid is surfing in Bali, which apparently is a thing that happened to Sage many years ago.
Because he was 12.
Because he's a lot younger in the Bally footage than he was in the cutting bait footage. We just go with it.
I take that as the film explaining that he had to go back to his younger, innocent days to slough off that fear, to confront it.
There's a scene of him watching his surfboard get made.
Yeah, yeah.
And while
which is a real thing that really happened. Like, father took son to get a surfboard made. Shot the footage, and now it's in the movie.
It's in the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's in the movie is the logo, is the motto of this production. Like, I got it, we got it, we might as well use it. And then they surf a lot, and that's it? The end?
The end. The end is like 10 to 15 minutes of just surfing footage and no dialogue.
Mm.
There is a tiny little one-minute sequence in the middle of it all.
Oh, yeah, where he's like on a beach with some friends.
He's on a beach with two of his friends who... I turned to Alonzo in the middle and I said, we need Chris Gardner, our friend who was born and raised in Cerritos. I said, we need him to come translate these kids because they are sitting there doing
this. SoCal mushmouth. And where do these...
Affectless.
Where did these characters
SoCal,
come from? How do they fit into the whole confront sphere subplot? We don't know.
They don't. One of them talks about a hickey. That he's got on his neck. That happens for about 5 seconds.
Yeah.
Then it's over. And
there's a terrible song in it that is the lyrics and vocals by Carol Connors.
Explain who she is.
She's this. She wrote the lyrics.
The most well-known person associated with this film.
Yes, she did write the lyrics to "Gonna Fly Now," the theme from Rocky.
Yes,
there are lyrics to that song. You just don't hear them very often. I know her from the Mystery Science Theater movie Catalina Caper, where she sings "The Book of Love."
Yep.
And apparently, if you run into Ms. Connors at a public event, she will quite happily do her impersonation of a dolphin for you, and it's pretty good.
She is not bad at impersonating the sounds of a chattering dolphin.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, so that's this movie. It may come to DVD sometime or a streaming platform someday if the guy who made it is really...
dedicated.
You know, really dedicated, and if he really believes in himself and his dreams. But here's my verdict, okay? It was a wacky experience.
Yes.
There's a really wonderful cameo by a liter bottle of Coke with an enormous red straw.
Yeah, like the big gulp straw from the 7-Eleven that's next to Los Tacos.
Literally across the street.
That is next to the Lee Strasberg
Theater. From where
they
were pretending to be a hospital. Watch that bottle. If you ever see this film, watch that bottle of Coke, because it exists and then it stops existing. It breaks down. It comes back to life. Very much like Teen confronting fear.
I was going to say, maybe the Coke overcame its fear.
And someday this might wind up on a DVD, but it is not, in my opinion, in the same category as films like The Room, films like After Last Season,
Dangerous Men.
Films like Dangerous Men. These are all examples of outsider cinema.
Yes.
And my personal approach to these kinds of films is that to really make me love you, movie,
keep me on my toes.
Keep me on my toes and keep me feeling that sense of mystery. And what I mean by that is I need to always feel a little bit uneasy while I'm watching this film, because I need to wonder, where did you come from?
Why
do you exist? Who are these actual human beings in this movie? And what are they doing right now? Because they are out in the world somewhere.
Right.
What drew them to the magnet of this production? And then what dispersed them, and where did they go? And what do they feel about this thing that they did? And do they think, like I'm thinking, that it might not be real? Like, it might just be my weird dream that I'm having. I need that feeling to exist in me, and it needs to come from the movie for the duration of its film, for the duration of its running time. This is
sort of vacation slides with a few terrible action scenes.
Yeah, you're watching it thinking, I don't know what this is. I don't know why it exists. But then over the course of its running time, you learn, oh, all right, so this guy has a kid, and the kid surfs, and the guy clearly surfs too. And he took all this home movie footage of his kid, decided to make a movie, threw some plot into it, barely, decided to get his buddies from who knows where.
The Lee Strasberg Theater in West Hollywood,
not.
Apparently.
The guy in the cap with the weird teeth near the end.
Oh, yeah.
Has no name and just wanders in and says stuff to the kid.
Yeah. It's okay to kill people.
He looks like, yeah, about how it's okay to kill people sometimes. Because God?
Because then because it stops them from killing people?
Yeah.
Or, I don't know.
That guy looks like an old, like, beach rat friend of the director.
Well, according to the movie's website, he does have some connection to the Strasberg. Like, he took some classes there or something.
Who?
The director.
The director. Yeah, yes. Okay, so, yeah, now we know he has a connection to the Strasberg, acting school.
Right.
And we know where he works. We know he has a real job somewhere. So I already know too much about this guy.
There's no air of mystery
here. And I've put the pieces together of this production in my head, and I'm pretty sure I'm right.
Yeah. It's not the, like, where is Tommy Wiseau from and where to get the money question.
No.
It's all sort of...
Or John S. Rad. Like, what is Dangerous Men and how did it come to exist?
Yeah.
By the way, this is not my DVD pick of the week, but go get the DVD of Dangerous Men.
Mm-hmm.
Buy it if you must. Your senses will never be the same.
and after last season, like, the guy is so cloaked in mystery, we don't even know if he's having us on or not.
Right. After last season, which is impossible to get now because the DVD is already out of print.
Yes. I'm sure the trailer lives forever on YouTube, though.
Is even weirder than anything we've been discussing. More cloaked in obscurity and mystery.
Yeah.
And the guy won't talk.
Yeah.
Like,
I've seen some interviews with him.
He's given interviews where he's very cagey. You don't know what he's on about. But you know what? This guy, this director of Surfer, has already done two Q&As for this movie.
True. No, he did one Saturday. He's got one coming up on Thursday.
Yeah.
And according to the website, he's made several films that have never seen the light of day. This is his first one to be released.
Well, maybe he'll put them all out in one DVD pack.
Ooh. The box set. The brick box.
Yeah. I had a fine time laughing at this bizarre, inept thing.
Yeah.
Okay, let's talk about Black Panther.
Okay, yeah. All right.
That's why we're really...
Yes.
We've been letting these people on for the past 30 minutes, promising them Black Panther.
Black Panther it is.
Yes.
Go. Okay, so we had a look at Black Panther in the Marvel Cinematic Universe briefly in Captain America: Civil War, but now it's time for his own movie. In Civil War, King T'Chaka of Wakanda is assassinated. In Civil War, King T'Chaka of Wakanda is assassinated.
Sorry.
And his son.
I forgot his name.
His son is T'Challa. inherits the throne.
The minute Civil War was over, I was done thinking about it.
Yeah, but you get a flashback in this movie to remind you of
you
it.
You do. That's true.
So we get to know the Kingdom of Wakanda, and it was built on a meteor of vibranium, which has made it's a technologically advanced society, and they're way ahead of the rest of the world, but they've kept it hidden. Everybody, as far as the rest of the world is concerned, they're this little tiny agricultural shepherd nation.
They're landlocked, they're protected by mountains and stuff, and so people don't go there.
Yeah, they're considered like this little tiny third world nothing, but they don't accept any foreign aid.
Right, because you know, guess what?
They don't need it. So we come to find out, so T'Challa as king basically starts to find out some of the dirty secrets of this you know, Shangri-La, one of which being that his father killed his uncle when his uncle wanted to sort of foment worldwide black revolution. His uncle had a son.
Yes.
His son became a black ops agent for the CIA.
I think so.
I guess.
There's a lot of detail.
Yes, he earned the nickname Killmonger,
which is my favorite villain name.
It's pretty great. He challenges
maybe I've heard in my entire life.
He challenges T'Challa for the throne of Wakanda. Meanwhile, you have T'Challa's ex, Nakia, who is a spy played by Lupita Nyong'o. Chadwick Boseman is T'Challa, and Michael B. Jordan is Killmonger.
Yes.
You have the woman who is the general of the army and runs the Dora Milaje.
Dene Guerrero.
I know her name. Yes, I forget the character's name.
Okoye,
played by Dene Guerrero. And then you have Shuri, who is T'Challa's sister, who is a tech wizard that makes Tony Stark look like Thomas Edison.
The baby man that he is.
Yeah. Played by Letitia Wright. And if you have never watched the BBC series Banana from Russell T. Davies, go to Amazon Prime and watch episode 2, which is all about Letitia Wright's character, and she's amazing in that. She's so great in this. She's a star. They're all stars. Everybody in this movie
really is
really great. And if I have one, and it's not even a qualm, but just a thing about this movie that's strange, is that Black Panther is kind of the least interesting character.
I don't know that I will agree with you on that, but well, continue.
Maybe not the least interesting
we'll
character.
We'll talk about that in a sec.
He's not as interesting as the three women in his direct.
Well, okay, let's be real here for a minute. Chadwick Boseman, his character,
yes,
T'Challa,
yes,
is meant to be stoic, stern, serious, no nonsense. He's there to get things done.
Yeah, usually in a superhero origin story, it's about, oh, I'm not ready, or oh, I have to overcome this, or oh, I have to learn this other thing. He's ready. He's ready to be a superhero. He's ready to be king. He was raised by Angela Bassett, so he's all good.
So you don't get a lot of that early humanizing
hero's journey
detail.
Yeah.
You are expected to understand that he's got this already.
Yeah.
Therefore,
he's all out of bubblegum.
The other people in the film, and they are all women, are popping up on the side and given a lot to do. This is an ensemble film more than a one guy with some supporting people. Because Lupita Nyong'o, Dene Guerrero, and Letitia Wright, they are all integral to what's going on.
Think of it this way. It's like if Guardians of the Galaxy had been called Star-Lord.
Yes.
You know, if this movie had been called, like, Wakanda, you know, right. then yes, by all means. Right. But Black Panther's like, well, yeah, Black Panther's in there. But, you know, these women are pretty great.
And you're not worried for him on any level. And that is, I think, one of the distracting ongoing snags in my enjoyment of all the Marvel films.
Stakes.
Because I know that even if a main character superhero like Black Panther dies, they can just bring him back to life in the next movie.
Like they did with Superman over
right,
in DC
like they
movies.
Did on the, yeah. And so I don't feel worried for any of the Marvel superheroes. Because I know that they are staying put until their contract expires.
Right. Well, that's how comic books work too. You know, I understand. They'll kill Superman every few decades to make a big deal about it, and right. then they'll bring him back.
But there's no sense in getting wound up about
sure.
that death, and no sense getting wound up about what's going to happen to Black Panther. Well, I'll tell you what's going to happen to Black Panther.
He'll be in Infinity Wars.
He's going to triumph because he's also in Infinity Wars that comes out like 20 minutes from now. So, yeah, my investment is with these three women who are, they are magnificent.
Yeah.
Like, all three of them, so watchable, so cool, so smart. They have good dialogue. They have great interactions with each other. And with him. Those costumes.
Oh, my God, they're so great.
It's such a beautiful-looking film. And I don't tend to look at the Marvel films and think, oh, this is gorgeous. What I tend to look at the Marvel films and think is, this looks like a Marvel film.
Yeah.
They look the same. There's a Bible and there's an aesthetic. And if you've seen enough of them, I've seen all, how many? 17, 18, 19?
18,
at
I
this
think.
Point, yeah. You know this world. And that's good brand building from a corporate standpoint.
Right.
It can feel alternately comforting to be in that world and
stultifying.
Occasionally trying to be in that world because of the aesthetic sameness. But this one kicks it up because it feels as though extra care has been taken to make this particular facet of the Marvel world shine in an extravagant, regal way. And because of this, I think that really helps the storytelling. Because this is a very, 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 very African
exactly.
film.
That's what I was going to say.
It is predicated on this dream of Africa, either the past or a hopeful future.
Afrofuturism is the term.
And given the history of the African continent, which has been pillaged and colonized and
exploited
by every Western European country that could get their mitts on it, that gives the film a kind of poignancy that other. I don't care what happens in Thor's cloud home. You know what I mean? Like, because it's not real. There's no real history to Thor's cloud home. Whatever his place is called. What's his
Asgard.
Place called? Yeah, Asgard.
Well, there's no Wakanda either, I hate to tell you.
I know there's no Wakanda, but Wakanda is on a real continent.
Yes, it is.
Okay, so. I had a very good time
it's
watching
real
this.
Fun.
I may need to go see it again because I am going to be fourth favorite substitute teacher on Who Shot You this week.
That's right.
Because you have a big Call Me By Your Name event that you have to go moderate.
Yes.
And I'm going to fill in for you. And we're going to talk about Black Panther. I think I need to see this twice just to have my...
I did see it a second time before reviewing it. So yeah, I would suggest if you can see it twice.
It is... Of the batch of Marvel films that I've seen, this is a top fiver, I'd say, for me. I'm into these characters. I'm into this world. Sure do love that Killmonger.
the cast is really great. I mean, I liked the rival chieftain played by Winston.
Winston Duke.
Yeah, yeah, I thought he was super charming and funny. Yeah. Yeah. Daniel Kaluuya.
The guys who live in the cave?
Yes.
I love those guys.
Those were amazing.
Yeah.
Daniel Kaluuya, who pops up as one of the tribe leaders, and they have I think they're called Basotho blankets.
Yeah.
But because it's Wakanda, they all have force fields.
Yeah.
He's really good, and he's just an actor. You know, after this and Get Out, I was like, I just find him, I like watching him.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, his eyes are super expressive.
He's got the camera like this. Uh-huh. Hey, I'm right here.
Yeah, totally.
So does Michael B. Jordan.
Oh, God, yes.
Michael B. Jordan.
He's been a movie star for a while now.
Not only is he great as Killmonger.
Yeah.
But as a villain, he's my hero.
He has an agenda that makes sense.
He's right. He's the villain, and he's right.
He's right in the Magneto way in terms of, like, yes, the principle is correct. I don't know about how you plan to go about this.
The minute he explained what he was going to do, I was like, oh, you should totally do that. I sat in the theater thinking, I'm not giving away stuff, but I thought, oh, you should do that. Like, I mean, I know personally, like, if I lived in this world, I would be slaughtered in your plan. But it would be, you know.
You'd have it coming.
I wouldn't personally have it coming, but as a member of, you know, all the colonizers of the world, the descendant of all the colonizers of the world, sure. He's right. Everything Killmonger says is true. And you're thinking, okay, yeah, you should be doing that. I know that the Wakandans don't want you to do it because they're very peaceful. And they want to, you know, they want to make the world better a step at a time with goodness and help and education and technology. But come on.
Definitely. As always with the Marvel movies, stick around for the closing credits. There's one nugget that's just sort of like setting up stuff for another movie. But there's one nugget that's just like kind of driving home the politics of this movie in a way that's very, especially in the times we're in right now, that's very, which right. I enjoyed very much. There are things about it that are, like, there's some special effects that are not the best.
Oh, I don't give a damn about those.
Okay.
Really, ever. They can look cheesy. They're going to look cheesy in 10 years because...
Everything will.
And so
look cheesy now.
Yeah. The action is sort of my least... I'm least interested in the action and the special effects of these films because, as our critic friend Matt Seitz said, look, at the end, you know there's going to be a big green shaft of light come down and everything's going to go...
And everyone's going to fight.
There's
a really fun section of this movie that feels like a... like sexy black 007 movie.
Yes.
Where from getting the gadgets.
Which just means that Idris Elba needs to be the next 007.
Right. Or hell, Chadwick Boseman. Well, he's got time between
or Chadwick
Marvel
Boseman.
Movies.
Right.
But from the getting the gadgets
can he
to
be
the
British?
To the he could be anything. Chadwick Boseman.
He could probably do a British accent.
He's been James Brown, Thurgood Marshall, and Jackie Robinson at this point.
I know.
You know, between the gadgets to the exotic location to the amazing car chase.
Was the new 007.
Oh my God.
I need a groundswell campaign.
Okay.
Lupita Nyong'o is the new 007.
I'm in.
That's my idea.
Yes.
I've given it to Hollywood. Please take it and do that thing.
I endorse this course of action. Yes, go see Black Panther then, is what we're saying.
You really should. And I keep rolling the politics of this film around in my head.
Mm.
Thinking that, you know, the more radical revolutionary arm of this film could have flexed a little harder and maybe it will in the future.
Well, I will say this. I think it's interesting that if you look at it, both Lupita Nyong'o's character and Michael B. Jordan's character are endorsing the same thing, but they want to go about it in very different ways.
Right.
And anyway, you'll see for yourself when you see the movie.
I did not stay for the closing credits.
You should have stayed for that first
but I will
thing that happened.
When I go see,
when you see it again.
Time.
Okay, good.
I did not do this because I saw it at the All Media. Mm-hmm. Now, you did not see it at the All Media. No. You went to the premiere.
Correct.
Where they did not take your phone?
Oh, they took... Well, they stick it in a magnet bag. That's... Disney does that for all their premieres now.
Okay.
So you have your... You possess your phone the whole time, but you can't get to it until after the movie's over.
I don't know what you're talking about.
They put it in a little satchel with a magnet clasp that you cannot open.
Oh, and so you can hold it.
So you can hold it. You hold the bag, and then when you leave the movie, you like they put the clasp onto a little doohickey that unmagnetizes it.
That's technological.
Yeah.
Well, I wish they'd have done it to us. Because now you saw it a second time on the lot.
Yeah, and same deal.
And they still took your phone like that?
They magneted.
All right, well, here's my thing now.
Okay.
I do believe that no one should have a phone in a movie theater. Failing that, if you have your phone on you, I don't want you turning the screen all the way down to the lowest possible light. I don't want you turning it to vibrate. I want you to turn it off. Because if it's on vibrate, as I have experienced while sitting next to my spouse, Alonzo Duralde, I can hear it buzz. I can hear it buzz in a very quiet, sort of Terrence Davies kind of film. And I'm like, what in the hell are you doing? Turn off your phone. Vibrate. Like you're trapped in the closet with R. Kelly. That is not what you're doing. You're turning it off. So, failing not having a phone in a movie theater at all, you turn it off, off, off. However, don't you take it away from me. I'm a good citizen. I will not turn that thing on until after the movie is well over and I'm out in the lobby. Especially don't take it away from me when there are 500 other people in the screening and we all have to give away our phones to you and we have to rely on your security staff who have no real vested interest in doing their jobs properly. They've got my phone, and I've got a little ticket to hold my phone. It is beyond insulting to do this to members of the press.
Yeah.
We are not the grifters who...
Pirate films.
So here's my current plan of action for my life from now on, because I do not like my phone being taken away. Mm-hmm. It is an insult to me.
Yes.
As a professional.
It's like it's inviting me to dinner and then frisking me to see if I took the silver.
That is correct. So, I no longer go to premieres because premieres are terrible and no fun at all. But I will also now no longer go to all media screenings of these Marvel films. I won't, because I am herded around like cattle. I recognize maybe a dozen other actual film critics in the audience, and the rest of the folks, I don't know who they are.
Well, and Disney doesn't do this to us for everything else.
And they don't do it for everything else. So I'm not doing this anymore. I'm not attending any more of these screenings.
All right.
I will go to the movie theater, the actual movie theater, on opening weekend.
On a Saturday morning.
On a Saturday morning or Sunday morning when I'll have the theater basically to myself anyway. I will buy a ticket to whatever the moral equivalent of Paddington 2 is. And then I will waltz right into your Marvel movie with my phone that I will turn off because I'm a human being who knows better.
Well, I guess you told them.
I'm still stealing your movie, though. You know why? I'm Killmonger, that's why. How you like me now?
That's great. I just as a quick thing.
I'm talking real big today, aren't
you
I?
You are. Like puffing your little chest
like
out.
Like I'm a big, powerful person.
Grr.
Yeah.
So you did not see The Party or Early Man. Lucky you.
Well, you know what? I'm still curious about Early Man because I love that Aardman.
I love that Aardman too.
I love that Aardman animation.
I love Flushed stop Away. Motion. I love Shaun the Sheep. This is a stop motion film. It is a stop motion film. Yeah, I am down for Aardman. I've been down for Aardman ever since Creature Comforts.
Tell me what's up.
In the 90s.
Tell me about this movie.
So this one is about as the end of the Stone Age butts into the beginning of the Bronze Age. you have this group of cavemen, and they are being kicked off of their land by the people who are mining metals for bronze. And so one of the cavemen gets the idea to challenge the bronze people to a soccer game to see who gets the land, because the bronze people have like a champion soccer team.
All right.
And there's a girl in the bronze people who wants to play, but of course they won't let her. So she goes and becomes the coach for the cavemen. And then the caveman guy realizes that his ancestors actually invented soccer, but that they were terrible at it. And so, you know, you have to learn that it's not your destiny and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Teamwork is good. It is not attractive. Like the cavemen almost all have these pig noses, and that just makes them not attractive to look at.
Right.
The jokes are not very good. And overall, I was shocked at how unengaged I was, because I love Aardman. I don't think I have ever not recommended an Aardman movie in the history of that studio.
You have never not.
I have never not. You know, The Pirates, Arthur Christmas, Love It, Chicken Run. This is not good.
On a scale of...
It's better than the Ice Age movies, not as good as The Croods.
On a scale of Kevin Costner's accent in Robin Hood,
which is zero,
to the most superfluous moment in The Crown, how British is it? And I ask for a reason. I think that the beautiful, wonderful, lovely Arthur Christmas was perhaps stymied
by its Britishness?
By its Britishness in terms of its appeal to American audiences who wouldn't get about 30 to 40% of the jokes.
It is pretty dang British in terms of, well, for all the soccer stuff, and like all the bronze soccer players are clearly these sort of like cartoony,
right.
Sort of, you know, like soccer divas.
Yeah.
You know? There's jokes about Manchester United. There's jokes about cricket.
Right.
You know, Rob Brydon plays the voice of like these two commentators who are doing the soccer game and stuff.
Right, right.
It's pretty British, but not, I mean, that's not a deal breaker for me. I love Arthur Christmas.
No, it's not a deal breaker for you and me because we consume tons of British media.
I understand that. I just want to be clear. I don't want that enough
and you're going to get those jokes.
Yes. I don't want people to think that I didn't like this movie because it's too British. Right. I didn't like this movie because it's poorly assembled.
Okay.
But
I'm saying that even in a good film,
yes,
that inside baseball quality, or inside cricket, I guess, is for a lot of American audiences who might not be exposed to as much British media as people who either actively consume it or whose job entails consuming it.
Right.
They might look at it and go, I have no idea what they're talking about.
Yeah. No, I'd say this is probably... It's at least as British as Arthur Christmas. So, you know, that is going to be an issue here. But just, you know, it's just not good. I mean, I had Ingu Kang did a ranking of the Aardman films for The Wrap, and she put this one dead last. And she had the least kind things to say about it. And you know, this is out of 7 feature films, and the top 4, she was like, okay, well, now we're splitting hairs because the top, all 4 of these are really great. But yeah, this was stone cold number 7.
Stone cold.
And then also from Britain is Sally Potter's new film, The Party.
And we both like Sally Potter.
We both like Sally Potter. And it's about 75 minutes. It's lean. It is one location. It's almost like a filmed play in a lot of ways. And Kristen Scott Thomas plays a woman who is, she's the new Minister of Health. She's having a party to celebrate her newly found political power. Friends come over, including Patricia Clarkson and her husband, Bruno Ganz. Lesbian couple played by Cherry Jones and Emily Mortimer.
Wings of Desire, Bruno Ganz?
Yes.
How old is he now? He's an old dude now,
I don't
right?
know. Lately, I think of him as Downfall Bruno Ganz, because every time I hear him speak, all I can think of is Hitler finds out about, you know?
Yeah, I know.
Timothy Spall plays Kristen Scott Thomas's husband. Killian Murphy plays a young banker who they know, and it's basically It's supposed to be a political satire, but they don't really have anything to say about politics. As a theater piece, it is clunky and obvious with the characters all sort of just declaiming things. None of the dialogue sounds organic. Everything sounds like it's a line. This is a great cast of talented actors, and they can do only so much with the material, which is terrible. This is a terrible movie, and it's a shocking Bummer. Disappointment because I love that director and I love all those actors, and it has
April really love it though.
She did, but I sat with Manola at the screening and we both hated it.
Well,
and
I'm going to have to see it.
There's a twist in it that I saw from the lobby. It's right. So obvious that it's coming. It's
look at you.
I really hated this movie, and for a 70, 75 minute movie, it felt longer than Happy Hour. It was unbearable.
I have a DVD pick.
Okay.
Looking for Langston.
Is it available?
It is.
Oh, good.
It's on DVD.
Okay.
It's from 1989.
Yeah.
It is not a feature. It is a 45-minute short film. I wanted to keep it in the realm of Black Panther today.
Okay.
And because Black Panther does not have any queer characters that we know of, although there is a scene, and I'm not going to go into detail here, there's a scene where Okoye reacts to something tragic in a way that suggests a little more than, oh, I'm so sorry my good friend just underwent a tragedy.
Right.
Yeah. I would love to see her character get a little more fleshed out so that we know, you know, what she's down for.
Well, she has a heterosexual partner in this film that we know of.
True, but...
But don't know everything.
Listen, I just want the bald lady to be a lesbian. Is that too much to ask?
Sure, we all do.
I want someone queer in the Black Panther world. I want someone queer in every movie, frankly. I do. I'm looking for some parody.
Absolutely.
I'm in the world every day. Being as queer as it gets.
And
I need more of that in film.
Is looking
Put
for
us in films, please.
Is looking for Langston.
Write us.
Isaac Julian. Am I remembering that right? Yes. Who was recently awarded a CBE.
Was he?
Yeah.
So this film came out in 1989.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a chance to see it in London.
Oh, nice.
And when it played in a theater there while I was there. And it is a fantasy based in truth about the life of Langston Hughes, the author of the Harlem Renaissance, and his queerness.
That incorporates Jimmy Somerville.
Yes. It is a black and white film. And it is... it's very high society.
Yes.
And
it's shot in a creamy black and white, and there's a lot of tuxedos in it.
One of the men has a dream, and he wakes up to find the object of his dream is with him. It is a play on, I'd say, the life and career and queerness of Langston Hughes.
The Langston Hughes estate has tried in various capacities to shut this movie down over the years.
Yes, well, guess what they can't do?
Exactly.
Shut this movie down. So, why his estate would not want...
Because they I think they are trying to still actively deny that he was queer.
Oh, are they?
Uh-huh.
Well, let's ask Zora Neale Hurston about this.
Indeed.
I think she'd have some things to say, I mean, if she were alive. But even when she was alive, she had some things to say.
And I wish I could recommend Brother to Brother, but it is sadly out of print on DVD. But that's a film about the Harlem Renaissance and the queerness thereof.
Starring Anthony Mackie.
Yeah. But I'm going to recommend Queen of Katwe, which I probably made it a DVD pick before, but I don't care. I'm doing it again. it is a gorgeous film set in Africa, and it features Lupita Nyong'o, just like Black Panther, and was released by Disney not nearly as successfully as Black Panther was released by Disney.
Well, because it's about chess.
It's about chess. Directed by Mira Nair.
Chess will make you cry.
It is devastating and riveting and powerful.
Not in a bummery way, just very moving.
A joyful way. Yeah, yeah. It's a great, great movie. It was one of my favorite films of 2016. And it kills me that more people didn't see it. So please do. The Queen of Katwe.
We have three letters. I will read them in descending order of length.
Okay.
I'm going to read the longest one first.
Okay.
We've been sitting on this since November.
Indeed.
It's from Leo. Here we go. I left you guys a 5-star review on iTunes like a month ago.
Thank you. Everybody go do that, please.
Under the name Javquizex Pitanero.
Okay.
A name which I'm sure you remember. That was a name I created in 5th grade. We do not know how old he is now.
No.
Where we had to pretend we were part of a newscast. I have absolutely no idea how that is my username for iTunes, nor do I have any idea as to how I can change it to something less stupid. Perhaps my birth name, for example, Leo. Anyways, I left you a 5-star review, obviously, because I love the show, but also because I wasn't sure how or where to comment on an episode, so I left you guys a list to get knifed. You had mentioned that during that week you had an abundance of 5-star reviews. Well, we do, but it's never enough.
No, never.
So if you're going to go to leave us a review, all listeners, and you should, on iTunes, make sure it's a 5-star.
Yes, on Apple Podcasts. Don't bring me...
You got 4 stars? Take that home with your groceries, because I don't need it. You bring me 5. You understand me? Are we clear? 5. I will now continue to read this letter.
Please do.
You had mentioned that during the week you had an abundance of 5-star reviews, so you understandably didn't get to read mine or any on the show. So I figured I could just email you guys so you could let me know how serviceable or terrible my taste in movies is by knifing it. Now, how long has it been since we have knifed a list?
It's been a while.
It's been a while because people just kind of fell out of the habit of sending us.
Yeah, probably because we've fallen behind on the mail.
We fell behind on the mail, but, you know, we always read some letters, but... We used to have a thing where people would email us and tell us their top 10 favorite movies. We would knife it, tell them what percentage knife they were.
Yes.
And everyone had a wonderful time. But that hasn't happened in a while. So if you want to do it, you want to send us your top 10 favorite movies, and you're not afraid of us telling you it sucks and that you're dumb for liking it.
Linoleumpodcast@gmail.com.
You go right ahead.
Yes. I want to hear more from Leo. What's he got to say?
Here are the top 10 films.
Okay.
His top 10 films. Number 10, The Rules of the Game.
Oh, hell yeah.
Chinatown.
Yes.
Lawrence of Arabia.
Mm-hmm.
Seven Samurai.
Sure.
That's one of my personal all-time favorites.
I know it is.
Casablanca.
Mm-hmm.
Vertigo. Another one of my personal all-time favorites.
I find it overrated, but I find
your face overrated.
My face doesn't get the praise it deserves.
Actually, no. Your face is real good.
Vertigo is, I'll allow it.
8.5.
Mm-hmm.
The Godfather Part 2.
Okay.
2001.
All right.
Citizen Kane.
Wow.
Those are all solid choices.
Yes.
Unassailable.
Yes. Maybe a little safe in toto, but nonetheless, each one a classic.
I'm
calling it like I see it.
Leo.
You're 100% knife.
Leo, you are 100% knife, and Alonzo just stuck a little bit of that 100% knife in you.
It doesn't tell me who Leo is. I'll put it that way.
He continues. This letter I told you is a long one.
Okay.
If you read my 5-star review, you may notice that I put Moonlight on the list instead of The Rules of the Game. I finally got around to watching The Rules of the Game so I could consider it at that honor. And secondly, I've decided that it's too early to call a movie that came out last year one of the greatest films of all time.
Fair enough.
As in many cases, time is the adversary of a film's quality. As evidenced by my new edition, it sometimes takes films years to get the acclaim that they deserve, and also vice versa in the case of something like Forrest Gump. While I'm positive Moonlight will ever be anything that isn't head and shoulders above Forrest Gump, I'd say it's too early to call it one of the 10 best films ever made. Lastly, as I am only 16, okay, well, now we know.
Ah.
Now we know how old you are, Leo. I'm sure there are a plethora of great, smaller, or foreign films that I have yet to see and are possible contenders for a top 10 of all time, so my list will definitely change as I continue to discover more cinema. Look, dude, you're 16 and you've already seen all these movies and you can discuss them with people, and I don't know what kind of school you go to, but they're doing a good job with you. Unless you're just an autodidact who... Did I even pronounce that correctly?
Yes, you did.
You know, you're the flower growing through concrete somewhere. We have no idea what your life is like, Leo.
But you're on the right track.
But we already like you. Let me find myself in his letter again. Hang on. My list will definitely change as I continue to discover more cinema. Thank you very much for taking your time to read this long-ass email. It was basically just me rambling about nonsense and then giving you my list to write. Since you've made it this far, or if you've made it this far, I might as well give you my top 15 directors of all time. Maybe you can offer me some others that I should check out that you feel deserve spots. Ingmar Bergman.
Go on.
Buñuel.
Okay.
Charlie Chaplin.
Mm-hmm.
Coppola.
Mm-hmm.
Francis Ford.
Yeah.
Fellini. John Ford. Godard. Hitchcock. Kubrick. Kurosawa. Scorsese. Spielberg. Andrei Tarkovsky. Orson Welles. Billy Wilder.
Well, yeah. I would throw in, you know, Pedro Almodovar. And Todd Haynes, and Ava DuVernay.
Ida Lupino.
There you go.
P.S. Dave, I have yet to see much from Brisson, but I'm sure once I do, he will make my top 15.
Claire Denis.
You want to talk about living people? The living filmmakers that I revere?
Mm-hmm.
Claire Denis,
the Dardenne brothers.
The Dardenne brothers.
Christian Mungiu.
Yep.
Criterion just announced that in May they are putting out both Graduation and Beyond the Hills. Beyond the Hills.
Yeah.
I always want to say Beyond the Lights, but that's Gina Prince Bythewood. Lucas Moodyson.
You're missing my three.
Well, then say them.
Oh, Xiao Shen.
Oh, right.
Apichapong, where is other code?
Mm-hmm.
Chai Ming Ling. They're my dudes. They are. Claire Denis is my lady. So, thank you, Leo. You're 16 and very smart. Okay, here's the one we got a postcard, a wooden postcard.
Yes.
From South Korea, and we were, I talked about it last time, and then we forgot to read it. When I say we, I mean
you.
Me. Howdy from Taipei, Mr. Linoleum Knights. I'm overseas for more dissertation stuff, and thought to pose a question from one of your more easternly fans. My question is this: what do y'all make of the problem of parsing script dialogue and usage required in subtitling foreign language films? Example, while in South Korea, I recall the word pabo, okay, used in place of the most vile of English expletives.
M-F-er, I'm assuming?
I'm guessing the C word.
Oh, or that one, yeah.
Because that's a word they say in the UK to much less
yes.
impact.
Right.
But you say it in the United States, and you're going to get a punch in the face. You could call someone a monkey fighting Monday to Friday. MF-er. in the United States and get less of a rise out of them.
Yes.
If you call anyone, man or woman, oh God, don't call a woman this. Don't call anyone this, but that C word is the one. That's what I'm thinking he's talking about.
Could be.
In usage, Pabu is worst, foul, idiot, silly person. Which changes the intent of the nasty, not to be repeated on your podcast words, used degradingly between characters. For some context, one of my students, a child, called me Pabu. Clearly it does not equate to the hateful language used in violent American cinema.
Well, you know, it's funny. This used to be a thing in American movies, like back in the day.
From BJ.
Thank you, AJ. Back in the day.
BJ.
Oh, BJ. Sorry. Yeah. Thank you, BJ. Back in the day when, like, a racy, you know, Ingmar Bergman movie, say, you know, from the 50s or 60s, which was far more sophisticated than what the code would allow, you would get a lot of stuff skipped in the subtitles. Like, I saw an old print of Smiles of a Summer Night one time.
Right.
And someone's telling kind of a ribald story, and the subtitles barely keep up with it. Like, they skip a ton of dialogue. But if you watch, like, the Criterion of it now, then you get the full thing of it.
Right.
There's even a joke about this in that movie, What a Way to Go.
Yeah.
Every time that Shirley MacLaine falls in love with somebody, she fantasizes about their relationship in a different genre of film, whether it's silent films or musicals or, you know, lush budgeted sort of 50s widescreen, whatever.
Right.
When she falls in love with painter Paul Newman in Paris, she imagines it like this Italian neorealist film. And there's a point where he is like, he's telling a long story, and the hand gestures obviously indicate that he's saying something sort of ribald and sexual.
Right.
And then the subtitles of that sequence are just sort of saying, like, she's so pretty. You know? So we don't do that in America so much now, but it may well be that in other parts of the world, like South Korea, that they're doing that kind of thing where they're soft soaping what the original content is.
I often find that there will be, you know, art house, heavy duty kind of art house stuff that comes from mostly from Asian countries when it is translated, subtitled into English.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what's being said, but I do know that whatever English word that they're using just has to be the wrong one. Because it'll say something like, the English subtitle will be something, you're a silly goose. And I'm like, I don't know. That doesn't sound like what that person would say.
And again, it depends on the kind of release. Like, obviously, for your Hu Xiaoxian films and stuff,
right,
I'm sure they're being subtitled by somebody who's really paying attention, as opposed to...
Well, we hope.
Yes, but as opposed to, like, when we saw, you know, Jackie Chan in Wheels on Meals.
Well, yes.
And Love is Conveyor Belt of Warmth. You know?
Listen, whoever did that subtitle is a genius.
Yeah.
Because we've held that close to our hearts all these years.
It's true.
Here's the last letter. It came to us in the mail, just like the wooden postcard.
Actually, this was a hand delivery.
Well, but still, it was written on a paper bag.
Yes, it is.
You're right, it was hand delivered. It's from the nephew?
Yes.
Nephew of our friend Dave.
Yes.
Layton. It's basically a 5-star review written on a paper bag.
Yes. Won't count for Apple Podcasts, but we cherish it.
Thanks for the awesome podcast. I tell all my friends to check out Linoleum Knife. Thanks for grounding my MCU fanboy opinions. You guys rock. Well, here's the best part of this. 5-star review written on a paper bag. There is a drawing.
Yes.
From Layton of you and me.
He sketched our, like,
Facebook group.
Yeah, our
profile,
our Apple Podcast, you know, album cover.
You reading your novelization of Hudson Hawk.
Right.
And me reading the novelization, not the novelization,
the
published screenplay of Godard's Masculine Feminine. But on the cover, he has written the words, Le French. And on the cover of yours, he has just written the words, Bruce Willis. I'm impressed with the likeness of your face and mine. I think we need to take a photo of it
and put it on the Facebook.
Put it on the Facebook group.
We should,
so everyone can judge it. It looks a lot more like us than the who did the
what, Ed Luce?
Who did the little painting? Oh, of us?
Oh! You mean Michel Gondry?
Michel Gondry did a little drawing of us as well. No, we don't know him. It's a long story.
It was a for hire.
Yeah, and we look like crazy monsters, which I love.
Yeah, but, no, there's an appeal to that.
But yeah, it looks nothing like us. And this one looks kind of almost sort of like us.
Yeah. If you want to see what we look like as drawn by Ed Luce, join our Patreon club.
Yes.
And get the t-shirt with the caricatures of us that he created.
Yes.
Yes. Patreon.com/linoleumknife.
If you'd like to join our club, here's how you do it. Patreon.com/linoleumknife. There are many ways that you can join. There are many tiers.
Yes.
And at those different tiers... At those different tiers, you get different contents.
Mm-hmm.
You get LKTV, a podcast of the television. You get Linoleum Knife and Fork, a podcast of the food, which is weird. I know. We are two film critics.
It's a food podcast hosted by two film critics.
Where we talk about all the cooking that we do.
And
all the eating that we do. And all the going to eat at places that we do. And weirdly...
The search for Umbrian lentils.
Weirdly enough... we have a drop-in third co-host, Margie.
Periodically, yes.
Who is a food writer and so connected to the food world that we have now had audio content on this podcast from food superstars like Nancy Silverton and Ruth Reichel. And so that's cool.
Suzanne Tracht.
That's very cool, and we're very pleased with ourselves. There is another podcast on there called Linoleum Nights, where we say swears and talk about politics. And
difficult subjects.
Difficult subject matter, or not difficult subject matter. It's just a play. It's just a place for us to use the F word
basically
with impunity. And so, like we would if you were just over here talking to us
indeed
off the microphone.
And some of the tiers offer tangible items as well.
T-shirts, mugs, things. Now... maybe you're listening and maybe you are already a Patreon person. You should know something. I made a colossal error at the end of the year and thought I had finished sending out all the stuff. Mm. Guess what? I hadn't. I found a whole stack of little note cards with people who just had not gotten their stuff yet. This is my fault entirely. I'm correcting it right now. I'm reordering some things that are out of stock, but everyone's getting their stuff. I thank you for your patience and for the way that almost everyone has not contacted me and said, what the hell are you doing? Where's my stuff? Like, you just know that I'm...
You know we're good for it.
Well, not that we're good for it, but you know that I've been... The end of the year last year, I was a bit of a recluse and a mess. And that's kind of how it happened. But I'm back on my... You know, again, and so
back in the game and bigger than ever.
it's getting handled. Anyway, join our club,
Patreon.com/.
Look, if you join at the lower levels, you don't have to worry about getting stuff in the mail. You just get extra podcasts.
Yes, you get an RSS feed. It goes right into your
it's
app.
So much easier
into your podcast app, whatever podcast gatherer you use, and you're good to go.
That's the advertisement for today.
Yes, it is. So yeah, do check out Who Shot You. Well, check it out every week because I'm on it, but check it out this week because Dave's on it. And subscribe at Apple Podcasts.
Check out me on Pop Rocket. Check out me again on the All Things Cozy podcast from last month, where I'm talking about baking.
Mm-hmm.
And who else in the podcast world do we want them to go find?
Well, golly, there's Canceled Too Soon and Critically Acclaimed.
That sounded like a rehearsed
segue. Yeah, no, I was very impressed.
Yeah.
critically acclaimed and canceled too soon, both with our friends Bibbs and Whitney. Right. The Schmoes Know, Dennis Anyone with Dennis Hensley, The Sewers of Paris, The Comics, Canon, All Things Cozy, Fat Guys of the Movies, The Criterion Cast, Film Spotting SVU, and Secretly Timid. You can subscribe to us for free at Apple Podcasts. And again, 5 stars really helps a lot. We'd really appreciate it. You can also leave us positive feedback in all the various places where we stream, including Stitcher Radio, TheLounge.com, Spotify, Google Play, CastBox, Podbean, iVoox, Podable, you know, all the places. Thank you, Blue, for our theme music. You're so awesome. And his other awesome music can be found at Bluetopia.com,
yeah.
Bluetopia. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at LinoleumCast. Drop us a line at LinoleumPodcast@gmail.com. And yeah, we haven't had any top 10 lists in a while. Let's start that up again. Why not? And yeah, that's it.
Is there anything
else? I think that's it. So y'all are great. We appreciate you listening.
Chicken breast.
Go roll that chicken.
Crumbs and Parmesan cheese.
So until next time.
Goodbye.